Hey everybody, it's Lee. I know we're heading into the off season, so we wanted to give a shout out to our title sponsor, NHL Sense Arena, one more time. And again, we have a coupon for $50 off an annual subscription when you use Hockey Never Stops at hockey.sensearena.com. I always like to remind everybody, I've been using this thing for 6 months and I'm just blown away, not just from the VR aspect of it and the virtual reality side of things, but the ability to give different perspectives of the game, whether I'm playing as a goaltender. And I got to admit, it is really hard, but it has really given me a perspective from that point of hockey, which has made me a better coach and a better ice hockey player. Or the skater modes, which help you work on cognitive skills and other things like heads-up play that you don't normally get to work on in a practice or a game. So I implore you to check it out. It helps us out. It helps them out. Support our title sponsor, NHL Sense Arena. Get $50 off an annual subscription when you use Hockey Never Stops at hockey.sensorina.com. Again, that's Hockey Never Stops. That's the code at hockey.sensorina.com. Check it out. And without further ado, enjoy this episode of Our Kids Play Hockey. Tournaments, tournaments, tournaments. You know, whenever you're listening to this episode, there's probably a tournament coming up, but we're recording it right towards the end of the year, which means a lot of tournaments are coming up. So we decided to bring on some tournament experts, Brian and Whitney Harrington, who have been in this industry for 30 years, go over all the good things you should be looking for, all the bad things, all the red flags. There's no way you walk away from this episode as a coach, a manager, or even a player, or a parent, not learning something about tournaments that's going to make the experience better. So enjoy this episode of Our Kids Play Hockey with Showdown Hockey Tournament. And always, you got to remember this. We say this every episode. HockeyWraparound.com, code OKPH at checkout gets you 20% off your entire purchase, and you get to support us and this show. You can get anything from Our Kids Play Hockey's book, When Hockey Stops, that Christy Casciano Burns and I wrote. You can get it personalized and signed to whoever you want. You can get the top blade protector in the world, the Hockey Wraparound itself. You can get the Dry Stick, which is a portable gear drying rack. Fits right in your hockey bag, really consolidates the space. A lot of solutions for hockey families over at HockeyWraparound.com, and a discount for you when you use OKPH at checkout. I'm doing my best smooth radio voice while I'm doing this ad. I hope it's working. If it didn't work, no worries. Let's get into the episode right now with Showdown Hockey Tournaments on Our Kids Play Hockey. Hello, hockey friends and families around the world, and welcome to another edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. I'm Lee Elias, along with my faithful co-host, Mike Benelli. And it's the time of year where tournaments seem to come every weekend, depending on what team you're on. So we decided to bring in two people with an immense amount of tournament experience to give us some advice on how to attack the travel, the stays, and, of course, the hockey being played. Those two experts are Brian and Whitney Harrington, the dynamic duo behind Showdown Hockey Tournaments, who have been bringing fun and competition together in Nashville, Tennessee, and the Washington, D.C. area for over 30 years. And unlike some of the largest tournament organizers, these two have kept Showdown Tournaments a family-run business for that time period and have introduced some pretty unique events with their tournaments, such as the Showdown Olympic Skills Competition and the elusive but much sought-after Tournament Crab Hat. We'll talk about those on the episode today. For those of you who have been to the tournaments, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The two were recently featured in this month's USA Hockey magazine in the article by our very own Christy Casciano Burns. Make sure to grab that and read it when you can. Brian and Whitney, welcome to Our Kids Play Hockey.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
No, actually, I should be thanking you for coming on, because in the madness that is the fall into winter into springtime period, we're all looking ahead on our calendars to what 8 hour, potentially 5 hour or longer journey we have to take to get our kids to these tournaments. So let's start with the basics, right? Let's introduce you to the audience. What made you get into the tournament industry, and why have you stayed?
Well, it started back in 1972. My parents got involved with skating. It evolved to hockey. And then shortly thereafter, the rink manager, Willie Marshall, who's played in the AHL for 20 seasons, him and my father partnered up, and they decided to do Can-Am hockey in North Tonawanda, New York.
Wow.
So we go back all the way to 1972.
Yeah, well, that predates me. I'm not going to speak for Mike, but you know, one question I want to ask right off the bat, guys, is this, and so everybody listening, we're going to dive into a lot of tips and tricks today to kind of prepare you. But I think it's important that we begin kind of the episode of that portion with how hard is it to run a tournament? Because I think when we get there, parents and kids, yeah, we're expecting something, but I don't think a lot of people know how much goes into the back end of obviously just reserving ice time, getting everybody there, finding people to show up, making sure everybody's happy, and you can't keep everybody happy no matter what you do. So how hard is it to run a hockey tournament?
It's pretty challenging, yeah. But we like to say it's like Disney World. We create the magic for you to come and have a great time. And there's all the behind the scenes secret stuff, but we joke about it. We should start a podcast on tournament snafus and all the things that happen and go into it, because it is pretty entertaining especially when you look back on 30 years of, you know, whatever it is. But I think the part that we spend the most time on is matching the teams. That's the most important part for you to come and have a good time, is to be in a competitive division. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I love hearing you say that, because I have been to tournaments where that's not the case. Or, you know, you hear things like, oh, we're just going to move you up to the next division. It makes more sense and, you know, it'll fit. And, you know, you end up going 0-3, 0-4, getting 20 gold. And that's just not fun for anybody. I think also, and I know Michael want to talk about this too, the matchups, right? I think one of the best parts of tournaments is playing against teams you haven't played before. Nothing frustrates me more as a coach, or even just as a parent, when I travel 5 hours and I'm playing a team from 20 minutes down the road. Sure. Right. So does that go into the planning at all, or do you actually try and, you know, diversify the teams that you're selecting?
We definitely try to diversify. So if we have teams that come from the same area, same league, your regular games, we try not to match you up. But when there's a crossover, you know, if you're in first and the other team's in fourth place and you end up playing each other, that's where we tell the teams that you might see that team from your league. But we definitely try. We will tell teams. We actually, in Nashville, we get a lot of 8U teams from Missouri, and we had to cut it off because we had too many, and we felt like, hey, you don't want to come down to Nashville just to play teams you play already. So there's definitely a balance in the decisions of the teams that we select.
Yeah, that's we're going to go over some red flags later on. I think that's a big red flag, is when you get the tournament schedule and we just played these teams, right? Mike, I know that's a primary frustration of yours. Do you want to comment on that a little bit?
Yeah, no, it's great that you have to think ahead a little bit, but it's also the responsibility of the folks putting themselves in these tournaments, right? They know the other teams going in, and you know, and I'm sure you guys, you know, do a good job of posting that as well. You know, say, hey, listen, you have, you know, 10 teams from Missouri coming in, and you're not going to play anybody else but the teams in your local district. So I think I'll complain about it a lot as a customer on my end, but it's also our responsibility as coaches and managers, and in our own region, we know, you know, other teams are going to these tournaments, right? So if you choose to go to the same tournament that the, you know, 7 other teams in your league are going to, you're probably going to have you can't do anything about the matchups. You know, once you get past that first round,
right?
You know, I'm sure you guys try to do a good job. Like I know the one horror story I heard just recently was two teams leaving school on a Wednesday to fly down to Florida to play in a tournament where they played the team next to them, the next town over, they played already 5 times, yeah, on the Thursday morning of the tournament. Right. So this is, to me, that's just egregiously an issue, you know, on everybody's part. But again, these tournaments are things where you have to just, you get into them and, you know, based off your article and kind of who you guys are, a lot of it's just not even based on the ice experience. It's based off the location and the ability to make like a great experience of coming to these things, you know, outside of the on ice product.
Yep. And I would say we see the most of those similar league matchups, because we go from AA all the way down to House Select, and House Select, you're going to pull from mostly the surrounding area, but the teams that come are excited because we're going to play them in a tournament setting versus, yeah, you know, I mean, but yeah, the same, but they already know that one, yeah, going into it. But usually at the A and AA level, there's a good mix. And I feel like we've been pretty lucky with, there's always a team, we call it the Tournication, who's planning to do a tournament vacation. So they're traveling from, you know, Nevada or California or Arizona, and that mixes in, it makes it more challenging to place them, but it is a lot of fun for all the other teams to be like, we're playing a team from wherever.
I think the other challenge too is that, you know, and I guess it probably helps with my hockey rankings a little bit now and the internet and having access to these players, these team schedules and who they and their like opponents. But you know, the frustrating thing is you people signing up for a tournament and trying to, you know, dumb down their team so they could win the tournament. And it just doesn't make that fun for anybody. I mean, you know, going in and winning a trophy, you know, and you beat every team by 10 goals doesn't help you, doesn't help the players. Really, nobody makes out from that. But it is a very challenging piece, right? It's like, well, you know, in an ideal world, we'd all want to be, you know, 2-2-1 going into Sunday, and every sure. game was decided by a goal and four overtime games. And but, you know, just it's the nature of the beast of going out there and playing other teams. And again, if you went into it, to your point, that it's a tournament vacation, you know, really go in. And I think for the parents that listen to our show, you know, go in with the understanding of what is your goal from the tournament. Right. It's not a tournament you earned by winning a bunch of games and got into. It's a tournament you chose to go to. And how are you going to make the best of that experience?
Exactly. That's why we have fun in capital letters, competition right. and fun, right? Well matched. Yeah. And
right.
Fun.
But the problem is the competition sometimes beats the fun out of it, right? So
it is
difficult.
It's about the experience. It's hockey is part of it, but there's so much more that goes into it besides just the games that you're playing. That's why we do those extra events at our tournaments too, to just give the teams a different opportunity. So back in the day, you know, if you played hockey, you used to go out of town and you used to billet with somebody, stay with another team's family. That kind of went away. So that is, one of the reasons why we do these extra events is to get teams in a different setting outside of a game where they're talking to each other on the ice, shaking hands, having a little bit of fun. It's not as it's competitive, but it's, you know, a little lighter than playing in a game. No referees.
Yeah, Brian, let's dive into those now. I don't mind going forward because you do some unique things at your tournaments. And I think that you're making a really great point. You know, when I go to my dad's house, there's like a trophy room there that he created. And there's a lot. I've been very fortunate. There's a lot of tournament trophies, right? And what's funny is when I think back now, 30 years, 25 years later, I can't remember almost any of the games from any of those trophies. I'm glad that we won, but that's not what I remember now as an adult. I remember the experience. I remember some of the extra things that we did. I remember spending time with my teammates. I remember aspects of the destination. I rarely remember any of the games. Right. And I'm pretty sure I played a role in the team succeeding, right? So it just kind of shows you what stays with you. You know what else I remember too, sometimes is the negative things, is the crazy hockey parent or the dad that was screaming over the glass at the ref.
Absolutely.
So the things you end up remembering from these tournaments, and don't get me wrong, man, if you win a game in overtime of the championship, you're probably going to remember that, all right? But remember the experience. And I love that what you both have done is included some of those extra experiences. So let's talk about that, the Olympic thing that you do and how you've added that in, how the kids look forward to those things.
Yeah, why don't you? Whitney will give it a shot because she...
talking to Whitney. Whitney, you tell us about it. I'm just kidding.
I'm the mastermind. So anybody who doesn't like the Showdown Skills event, I'm the mastermind.
To be fair, I haven't heard anyone say that one time, but go ahead.
Yeah, but it started with Brian's father when he ran the first few tournaments before he
1991 and 92.
And they had a shootout. So that was the extra thing. Right. And sometimes the shootout would go for hours. It'd be 11 o'clock at night. And these little kids are still shooting on. So then we started to hear from the parents about the poor goalie, but it was all this fun and they got this cool plaque and it was all exciting until that was the problem. And the other one was there has to be a way to end it in a timely fashion for the sake of the kids and having some more fun.
And you're picking. And in that setting, you're picking out the best. The coach is going to pick the best player and the best goalie. And that's not what we were trying to accomplish. Yeah. So
then I said, okay, let's figure out a way to include all the kids and get them all on the ice from every team in the division at the same time. So they'll be up to, have we ever had 8 teams on the ice at the same time?
Yeah, okay. We've had up to, I think, 12. Sometimes we bring in 2 divisions. We'll have, you know, 6 teams in each division. They're all on the ice together.
But they and they do a relay race where it includes 9 skaters, the goalie, and a coach. It's a highlight because everybody loves seeing their coach skate the obstacle course and come back and do that. And then Then we have it sectioned like a decathlon. There's like five or six different events going on at the same time on the ice. And the whole point of it was so that you can't calculate, we won that, we won that, we won that, we won that, because it's not about what you won. Right. It's about and every kid doing some fun stuff. So there's shooting and skating and hardest shot and how many shots. And then there is a mini shootout that ends after the round and everybody gets going. Yeah. But then at the end of that is also where we do our participation part, where the crab hat comes in, or the cowboy hat, or a red, white, and blue hat for our capital Americana theme. So we just, you know, so that way everybody's getting something. You get medals during the Olympics and as well as the games, but it's something that's totally different.
There's our cowboy hat.
There's the cowboy hat.
These are the things that everybody talks about from your tournaments. Is these
they do, hats. And they come the teams that come multiple years still want the same straw cowboy.
Yeah, we were going to switch up a few times, and people are like, "Where's the hat?"
Yeah, we just want.
We don't want a towel. Where's the hat?
How dare you being fun to hockey tournaments, guys? It's supposed to be a serious matter where you're supposed to go to the championship. No, I love that you've done this. The other thing I love about it too is. And I'll be very upfront about this and follow me here. I'm not a big fan of participation trophies. All right. I'm a believer as a coach, you know, there's winners in tournaments. Now you can do the Olympic style thing of gold, medal, you know, gold, silver, bronze. I've never had a problem with that, but I love that you've kind of spun the participation aspect of this into something fun. If you're coming here, you will be rewarded for being here, because hockey is supposed to be fun. And we have these wonderful gifts that we're going to share with you for participating in our tournament. That to me is brilliant, because and I think more tournaments should rethink this, because again, I don't think every kid should get a trophy when it comes to the actual tournament itself, right? I think that that's reserved for winning or runner up if you want. But I think the idea of celebrating that we're here together to have fun is a brilliant thing, and I really commend you for that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It makes great team pictures, you know, because there's not the trophy, but the whole team's wearing their hats and doing their thing. Yeah. And the other part of it is the way we got to giving the giveaway out during this was when you've got a four-team division and you've awarded, especially 8U or 6U, and you're giving out three sets of medals, and there's one. They're like, well, what do we get? And
It fills that gap.
It fills the gap. It makes everybody happy.
Plus, off the ice with something. And that's the hat. The hat.
I think we can make the argument that in 8U, it's a little different than, you know, 10U, 12U, so forth and so on. In the sense of 8U is very much, let's have fun playing hockey and love the game. Right. Yeah. And I do tell my 8U team, because, you know, we don't keep score in our regular season games. Yeah. When you get to a tournament, they do keep score. And I talk about the aspect of competition. Right. And that there is sometimes a winner and a loser, but it's about your work ethic. Again, these are 8 and under kids. These are the lessons we try and teach them. Right. So I just love that you figured out a way to do that, because I think that especially other tournaments, that there's too many of them are cash grabs and they don't care. And it's just like, thanks for being here. We needed another team. Thanks for your dues. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we do.
Well, the effort you put in to the gift for the participation just shows, you know, kind of, you know, really where you value your tournament. Right. I mean, it's not a, hey, you know, anybody could rent a bunch of ice and throw a bunch of teams out there and, you know, hopefully some scorekeepers show up and maybe somebody comes with a bag of pucks. But I think it's just like, I mean, what are we doing to make the experience better and then have those kids leave there? And I personally think it's a brilliant marketing piece, right? Those kids go back into their communities and they have these hats and everybody's like, well, where the hell did you get these hats from? You know, like, oh, we were in a tournament in Nashville and, you know, our team won this and we, you know, nobody sees a trophy. Nobody sees a medal. Those things are gone. I mean, those things just, I mean,
but they remember the hat.
They don't get out of the bottom of the car half the time. Right. Or they're sticking their hockey bag for the rest of their life. But I think it is great. I personally love that kind of stuff. I love the fact that a player can leave. It's the reason why when you go to the Quebec tournaments that they do the pin exchange, right? Because there's meaning behind it and people anticipate. I mean, imagine if you went up to Quebec and they said, oh, by the way, nobody's doing pins. Yeah. People would freak out.
They'd lose their minds.
I'm sure the same reason if you stopped doing hats 1 year, some would be like, whoa, what happened here? You know, we came here because of this.
We came for the hat, yeah.
But we did have the supply shortage with the hats and they had headbands, but they had crab hats, whatever. But to the pin exchange, we do run a pin exchange as well. It's not as big as in Quebec, but in our Nashville tournament, about 70 to 80% of the teams all trade pins with each other from their league.
Which is awesome. Yeah.
In the DC area, it's still on the edge, but it's open to everybody. Right. And it's something that we pride ourselves in. That goes back to Brian's experience of growing up in youth hockey and trading.
Yeah, having the jacket full of pins, your hat's full of pins. You walk up to somebody, say, hey, I like your pin. Let's trade. You know, it's all about the experience.
I love it. I think for new parents too, for people that are in, from the game and you know, and can have, it's the same reason why people collect pucks, and it's just like, you know, it's just a fun thing to do and gets the conversations going, gets people meeting each other, you know, when they're just walking aimlessly past each other and say, looking at the schedule and say, okay, when's team A playing, in what locker room, let me get in, let me get out. Like there's so much other, it sounds like to me, I've never been to one of your tournaments, but it sounds like to me there's just so much more energy and interaction going on between the teams other than I'm here to kick your butt and get out of here with a win.
Right. Yeah. I would say this mentality stems back from at least my childhood, and I would say Whitney's as well, our experiences. When, you know, a few years I played for my father, he was my coach, but I saw him coach many teams that I was not on. 90% of the teams he coached, I was not on. And they went to tournaments. They started off the year a fishing trip, but they played hockey too. So they would go up to Canada, stay at a cabin and fish all day and then go play hockey. And all his trips that he would do, you can go swimming. Let's go skiing. Let's go have fun. Then we'll play hockey. And if we win, you know, we win. If we lose, we lose. But it wasn't focused on, we got to go to that tournament and win. It was focused on the experience of having a good time with the families and the kids, with other things to do other than play the games. And I think that's a little bit lost today out there in the hockey world is, you know, hey, we're traveling to Nashville, Tennessee, and let's have the best experience and time. Let's make the most of it rather than just focus on, we got four games to play and we got to be well rested. And because the kids actually come out and play much harder for you when you've let them, they'll give you that extra mile when you've let them, you know, you unleash the reins a little bit.
Well, especially if they're having fun.
Yeah. I mean, Lee can speak to this better than I can, but I mean, I think that's the reason why, you know, the byproduct is they probably won a lot of tournaments. Because there's a lot of bonding going on there. It's like, so like, you know, most people would look at him like, oh my God, this guy's not serious. He's got kids fishing. This is a hockey tournament. Like these kids are just out there having fun and goofing off and, you know, getting to know each other, and it's too light. And all of a sudden you say, well, they won one game and now they're closer, and now they won another game and now they're even closer and they're having more fun. And it just, it's one of those things where it's the byproduct of the allowing them to have that fun. And Lee could talk about this from a team building perspective, is like, that is where the bond is what builds the wins. And I think, you know, to your point, you know, if you get a chance, if you go to one of your tournaments and the only goal was for team bonding, then they've accomplished, you know, you can accomplish that pretty easily.
Well, I can absolutely speak to that too, Mike. And look, it goes back to the pins we were just talking about, like in the trading of pins and talking to somebody from another place that you don't know about. And just even having that 5-minute conversation, we did a whole episode about the importance of communication recently, right? For young kids to meet kids from other places with accents, even other countries in some places, it's so important to see that there's another world out there. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, Mike, I went to a tournament. I met a kid from Brampton, Ontario, and I had never met anybody from Canada before. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's a different world up there for them. And I was from the city, and it was a totally great conversation and perspective that I needed to have at a young age as a teenager. Now from a team bonding standpoint, I'm a big believer. I think I wish teams would all go on road trips early in the season, just to get away from everything and the pressures and the seriousness of the season. These trips are opportunities for you, as Mike said, to bond as parents, as players, as coaches to players, as players to players. But it's all about the environment that's created. If you create a pressure cooker environment, for really anybody 18 down, I mean, you're going to get the results of a pressure cooker. It's going to be stressful. It's going to be hard. And you're putting all of your onus on winning the tournament, which I'm not saying there shouldn't be onus on that. All right. Yeah. But if that's your only thing, you're going to be miserable. And again, look, Mike and I have seen this tournament in Boston. I won't mention it, but you go to Boston, you don't get to see Boston. It's a high level tournament. And then you have to pay, even as a parent, to get in to watch the games. And the kids are all told, oh, there's people watching, there's scouts watching. Well, what kind of environment are you creating here? Right? You know, excuse me. Like,
well,
I just think that I understand the need for showcase tournaments at the higher teenage levels to show talent. I don't understand why we have to sacrifice fun in those environments. And again, I know you guys, you know, focus more on the younger age groups, but again, tournaments can be a cash grab. I mean, a huge red flag for me is I have to pay to watch the game. Are you crazy? Like what are we doing here? So anyway, listen, I want to refocus us here because we're talking a lot and I did want to ask these questions before we run out of time. Right. In the article that you guys did with Christy, there's a whole section about proper planning for a tournament. Everything from equipment, you know, skates and gear to budgeting to making a plan. Can we talk about that from your perspective? Two people that have seen thousands of families show up to a tournament. What are the ways to properly plan for a tournament?
Well, I think it starts with, for us, we communicate with the team manager. So every team, their team manager is our point of contact and emails go this way and that way directly. So what you need is a great communicating team manager to get you all the information because we're going to give it to you. We have a 20-page tournament information package. And I told Brian, I'm like, that needs to be broken down.
You should do an instructional video. That would be
funny. Used to be sent in the mail. That 20-page thing came in the mail.
You could do like an infomercial with like, hi, everybody.
But we broke it down now and we put it online. And it's more digest. So anybody has access to it. So any, you know, if you were even interested in our tournaments, you could just go poke around and be like, oh, okay. And it's more digestible. But we're very thorough, trying to cover every single base.
Right.
But we also give people, like just for Thanksgiving, we sent out an email to all the teams that are coming in December and then our teams that are coming in March and said, you know, happy Thanksgiving. And if you owe us this, and this is what's coming next for you. Because that's the hard thing. Because you got the great planners and then you got the ones that are just at their wits' end because they've overcommitted. They're, you know, managing multiple teams, whatever your life circumstances, but they're overcommitted where they can't process it. We try to get you, this is what we need now, you know, timelines. And then everything is, even on our website, it says when the list is ready, when the schedule should be released, when the, just to kind of help you along as a parent who's coming to know, okay, well, we're waiting on our team manager, but that's the main thing.
Yeah, I think communication's the key. If there's gaps, like when you first apply, you do get a notification that, you know, your application's been accepted, but there's a little, you know, break in communication. But once we are getting closer to the event, there's constant communication. If you don't do that, I think there's a breakdown. 100%. And I'd say on the team's side, the number one thing that really they need to consider is, are we committed to the tournament? Because when they decide a month before to drop out, it not only affects their team, but that division. And that division, if it is not a large division, could get canceled.
And that's a great point. I'm
not sure that the team thinks about the other teams that are wanting to come and have planned to come. It's in their budget. We picked our two or three tournaments for the year, and now a team or two drops out and it folds the whole division. I think that's something that could use a little bit more thought from the teams when they're selecting tournaments.
Yeah, that's my, I'm going through that right now. I'm like, are we going? Who's going to this tournament? Because the minute I get my flight, that's it. Like, I'm going. Right. I'm going there. So I don't know about you guys. I will be there. Just please let me know if the team, and I'm not the team manager. So, but I'm just saying, it's just like one of those things where you're absolutely right. I mean, but it's that's systemic, right? For any sport and anything we're doing. Think about the other, like, you can't just sign up for something and be like, well, it doesn't matter if we don't go. Well, it does matter because you've affected the tournament, six other teams, or in this case, maybe five other teams. You've affected people's travel plans. You've affected people's destination. You've affected your own parents. Like there's nothing worse than a tournament, you know, sending you out the schedule the Monday before the Friday's first game. Right. but again, knowing, you know, for somebody that's run tournaments, that's most of the time the result of a team dropping out on Sunday and then being like, oh God. Okay. So remember the schedule we sent you six times for the last 4 weeks, that's now changed. So, but there is so much juggling, and then everybody wants the 11 a.m. game and the 5:30 p.m. game, right? Wants time to get out and get to dinner with their team group, wants to be able to get out on Sunday morning early. So everybody wants the same thing. So I'm sure, maybe you could talk a little bit about the challenge of preparing the managers you work with to make sure they're disseminating information about, not that it's hard, because people expect you're getting money, right? People go, well, it is hard, right? But how does a manager make the experience better for their parents? And, so they're not all calling you, like 19 different families aren't calling you to get this information.
They're doing a pretty good job of that. And we do that at the tournament too. If there's an issue, it's going through your team manager or coaches, not through all the parents, because then it just becomes pandemonium. So it's keeping everything, on smooth, and when the bumps come, so that they can get smoothed out. Right.
Yeah. The decision to release the schedule is probably one of the most important aspects of the organization of the tournament. So when you release that, it's go forward, because you don't want to have to call referees, scorekeepers, the rinks, move teams between rinks. Right. Part of the decision on where they play is if you're out of town, what hotel you're in. Well, we had you at the rink that's 20 minutes away, but now we've had some changes. Now you're playing at the rink that's 45 minutes away. I think that's an important part, is when do you release the schedule? You know that everybody's committed and there's not going to be any changes. And we've been pretty successful at that. We've had very few times that we've had to go back and change the schedule. And that just keeps everybody kosher and everything moves forward without any hiccups. Because once you change something, you find out, oh, a team went to the wrong rink. They were using the old schedule.
Somebody got missed. Yeah, referee got missed. The scorekeeper got missed. Somebody's going to get missed.
Super important to get that timing right once you launch that schedule.
But I think to Whitney's point too, it's also important for the manager to communicate that properly to you. Like, a lot of times, I'm sure this doesn't happen, but you're not sitting at the table and going like, listen, that was Wendy's fault. We had nothing to do with it. Like, this person is the worst manager. Like, it's always like the customer is always right. That's kind of philosophy. But the customer can really screw things up for you if they're not getting you the proper information.
Sure. So we try to, we stated in the original information saying, no scheduling requests are honored. And that's for what you said, Mike, because if everybody said we want to play at 11 and 5 because we're going to the pro game and we're going to go have a team dinner, and then how are you playing in the hockey tournament? But we also try, Brian does a really good job. He's a scheduling master where he spreads your games out so that you have time between to go and eat a meal.
Yeah, that's a great point, because you do go to some tournaments where you've got a 2-hour break between games.
Yeah.
We try to do 6, 7, 8 hours between games.
That's awesome.
I've been to 5 tournaments in the last 2 months that I don't think I've been to the rink, to the hotel, to the rink, to the hotel, and in bed. I mean, it wouldn't even matter what was going on outside. It didn't matter. I mean, but that's not my fault. It's our fault for signing up for the stupid tournament. But I think for us, it was like, well, didn't any thought go into the fact that we're in this beautiful place we're working with high school level kids that are looking at colleges right now. Like, the whole idea of these tournaments, and you go to Boston or you go to Rhode Island or you go somewhere, you upstate New York, you want to be able to say, well, wow, I have a 3-hour, 4-hour block in here. We can get out of the rink. We can go visit a bunch of different colleges, see some campuses, see what's going on. If I'm in Nashville, I'm going to Tootsie's, or I'm finding a way. I got to go somewhere where, there's an experience that I can enjoy too. Right. So I think it's like, and I'm sure every tournament you have, because I would do it right now. If I was signing for your tournament, I go, okay, Predators are playing the Dallas Stars Saturday night. Do not schedule me a game after 5 o'clock.
There's a tough Saturday. One. Yeah.
It happens. But guess what? This year, the Preds are out of town.
Yeah, good. They're out of town. That helps you. That helps you. I guarantee it.
It does help.
It does.
But we also want to support, and they've been great. I mean, the Predators have been great over the years too. So have the Capitals with, trying to get the kids there and doing all that. So it's when it works. But yeah, it's just everybody taking a breath and realizing it affects more than just you and your team. There's 50 something teams coming in December, and in March we have our 2 tournaments that each are going on 65 to 70 teams. So that's a lot of people, a lot of moving parts. So when one team or one manager says, hey, can we just, it's not a big deal, it's like,
It's a huge deal.
But we try to do what we can, but we also say, you know, please don't make requests unless it's something really necessary.
And there's some years where we did reach the 100 team, tournaments, participation. And I think we prefer to do 50, 60, 70, somewhere in there is a better number because it provides us and the teams a lot more flexibility. Once you start ratcheting it up, lose that flexibility. And I think it's a better experience.
Yeah, but Brian, I'm glad you brought that up because one of the things I think that's really great about your tournaments is that you did realize, like, hey, you know what? This is too much, right? And we can't operate to our standard because it's too much. Yeah. And I think that that's something that when we're looking for tournaments, people should think about, right? Are there 100 teams in this tournament? Because, again, it's not that the tournament would be run bad, but that might be a red flag of there's too many moving parts. There's too many things going on. One of the other things we're talking about is these ice times. I would say there are some situations where two games close together in a playoff scenario is very, very frustrating if you're the only team doing it. If every team has to do it, it's all gravy. But as a coach, I often tell the parents and the kids, like, this one game or these two games are at a horrible time for us. And that's adversity that we have to overcome together. So you're going to have to plan about it. You're going to have to do better with it. So, it's right at dinner time. We're going to have to think about our food before and after. So, like, all of these things at tournaments, the good and the bad, are opportunities for you as a coach or a manager or a team to overcome adversity. Things are not always going to work in your favor. Here's the other thing, too. You want some mentality stuff? The team that gets to the playoffs that had three rough times is going to be a little hungrier to win than the team that had the perfect time. So convenience is not a guarantee when it comes to tournaments. What should be the guarantee is what you two are providing, which is a good, memorable experience with the opportunity to look around where you're at. All right. I would be so frustrated if I was at a tournament at a location and I didn't get out of the rink or the hotel, like Mike just said. Like, that is not the point for us going. Right. So I applaud you for that, for making sure that that happens. You know, the other thing I wanted to bring up from the article, too, was we talked about performance, right? Especially, like, when it comes to meals and rest and the arriving. So, Brian, you had said you guys do a good job of kind of scheduling things out. You talked about managers. You talked about prepping the teams, right? What are some of those keys the teams should do to be prepped when they arrive so that they can go out and do things?
Yeah, they definitely should, you should make sure that you get to the rink, within, amount of time to warm up and, check out the facility, especially your first game.
Right.
Really knowing where that, everybody knows where that rink is located. And there's a time that everybody's expected to get there. And then you'll have plenty of time to, prepare yourself for the game mentally, do some warm ups. But if you got everybody scurrying around, and again, it goes back to communication. If we're communicating properly and the managers are communicating and the families, the parents are listening to their manager, everything works well. So it's really just giving yourself adequate time when you're going to need to get your skate sharp and get some tape, maybe even buy a stick. You got to show up to the rink with enough time and know that the facility that you're playing at has,
that's a great point, right?
Pro shops.
What if they don't have a skate sharpener?
So
yeah, we just had a guest recently that was our manager guru, right? And I think what she talked about, one of the things that you're bringing up is that boilerplate time, place, uniform, time to be there, time we're leaving, if it's a home game, who's running the clock or who's checking the kids in, who's locker room monitoring, and just have that boilerplate piece, right? Then you just stick in whatever those duties are to help you. And I know that probably helps you too when you come to a rink. Like, there's nothing for me as a coach more frustrating is trying to guess, like, okay, are we wearing home? Are you wearing home? Who's wearing the blue jerseys? Who wearing the white jerseys? Like, is there a medic here? Is there a pro shop? I got five kids that need their sticks cut. Well, is anybody going to let them use a saw? Do we have a saw? Like, it's like this whole thing that you need to go through every single weekend. And we can avoid all that just by having that communication piece and following your 20 page, guide to your, which again, to me, I'm like, thank God there's so much information there. Like I I shouldn't miss any of this, but it comes down to just that piece of communication is like parsing it all up so that people have responsibilities to do these things.
And part of it, you know, falls on the tournament. When you get into that rink, we'll just say, you know, some of them are 2 sheets, 3 sheets, 4 sheets. We notice on a Friday, the first, you know, day of the tournament, people come in a scurry. They look lost. If you have people that are in the lobby waiting for those, you know, teams to come in and greet them, that includes the rink staff.
Right.
Some rinks operate different than others. So we're fortunate to have some great rinks that we play out of. They're very concerned about keeping things scheduled on time. So it's when you first get in, how do you get people organized and you know, situated for them to make them feel comfortable rather than feeling like, okay, I'm overwhelmed. Where are we? You know, what rink are we playing on? Where's my locker room?
There's nothing more frustrating, right? Than you go to a tournament and the person that's sitting at the desk does this.
Yeah.
And just that's doesn't look up. Like, please don't speak to me. Please don't come to my desk.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah, look at the board. All the games are on the board.
Just doing this. They just, but it's like, but again, that's like the old gap greeter, right? Just give me an opportunity to know that, okay, I'm acknowledged. I just paid $10,000 to be here. Thank you. I'm here for the great weekend. Just tell me where to go. Tell me when to be there. Tell me when to get out.
Well, you know, Mike, it's like here, the best ones I remember. Here's your tournament pack, right? Here's a bunch of information for you. Here's a table of information. Take whatever you need. What team are you on? Great. Here's the rink you're in. This is your first game. Is there anything we can do for it? We got to remember too. We didn't even mention this. This is after parents are probably dragging their kids, you know, from a stressful. So just to get them to the rink on time, you're already stressed when you get there.
And they're drunk.
Most likely. Maybe sometimes some of them are right. Never me, but yeah, but it's one of those things like that first, Brian, you make a great point, Winnie, you too, that first interaction is huge, right? Cause it sets the tone for the whole tournament.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that, and again, I love that you guys do this cause I've been to some horrible tournaments. I'm going to talk about some of these nightmares I've been to before. But let's stay on the positives too here with what's working. So you introduce them, right? And do you guys hire someone to do that, or is that just the staff? Do you educate the rink ahead of time? What are the best practices?
So there's tournament tables set up in the lobbies of each rink.
Right.
Right. And well, like Brian said, at the Gardens Ice House, their information center, they're very helpful and friendly. And at the Centennial Sportsplex in Nashville, super friendly. You know what I mean? So there's that combination, but we're sitting there, one of us or our kids or some other friends in the neighborhood. Luckily, they've been helping us over the years, right? So we present that tournament front of here's where you can get your information for whatever you need, right? So that's a helpful one. But I'm like, we need a flag so you can see over all the people because it gets a little crowded in the lobby.
They look for you, right? And look, just even seeing a smiling face, I get it, you know. And again, I remember the best tournaments I've been to. Sometimes they might even give the kid like, "Hey, here's a little candy or a gift. Thanks for being here." The kids love that. You know, the kids don't feel the stress the same way the parents do. The kids just want to go out there and play, right? And I think that helping the parents probably ends up helping the kids. Let me ask you guys this. This is going to be one that everyone relates to that's ever been to a tournament. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the crazy things I've seen at tournaments. Right. Or common situations that I would love to know how you kind of combat this or prepare for it. Here's a few off. I wrote them down. A few. I have been to a tournament where after the regular games were done, one of the teams had to do something the next day. So they reseeded the playoffs, which was insanity to me. So you earned your playoff spot. They had a team in second. They said, well, you're in fourth now because it doesn't work out for this other team. That was insane to me. That was one of them. I can understand why everybody was upset. I had one tournament where the rules were very unclear for tiebreakers. And again, tiebreaker rules at tournaments are insanely important. I you guys are not going to disagree with that. You're shaking your heads. I have been there where you have multiple teams. There's a three-way tie and a team is selected. I was at one time where head-to-head was not the tiebreaker, which is, that was terrifying to me. Yeah. And a team that didn't win against the two teams they tied with on it was a goal differential or something ended up getting in. Right. Which again, I think in a competitive nature, in my opinion, you can disagree with me, head to head should be one of the first tiebreakers when it comes to going to a playoff scenario. Then there's the referee situation. And unfortunately, you know, when you get to a tournament, parents and people that are watching tend to watch every game like it's the Stanley Cup Game 7 playoff thing. And if my kid doesn't win in this game, or there's not, and the, you know, these refs, for lack of a better word, they're amateur referees. They're not NHL referees. They're going to do the best they can, and they're getting, I would never want to ref a tournament, just personally. How do you combat some of these crazy things, again, from seating to tiebreakers to referees, and then, you know, even maybe out of control parents?
I'll take a stab at that.
Yeah, so, it was a big one. I'm sorry. It's a big question.
Straight off. We got
with the seating has evolved. We used to put up the big boards at the rink. We stopped doing that since COVID. COVID really changed how we do everything. Everything's done, you know, via website. All the standings are up there. All the points are up there. But when we used to do those boards, people would be, there'd be 30 people over your shoulder, especially when you're deciding who gets advanced.
I remember that.
My guys and gals at work, they all made mistakes. You know, they added up something wrong.
You came under the pressure. You can do the math, but there's too much pressure.
Yeah, like, I remember seeing that. That's ridiculous.
People are trying to tell you, oh, it should be this way or that
way. They paid you off. You got paid off to put that team ahead.
Well, we always had a parent that would say, okay, if you win by three and they lose by six, and if this team shows up at the rink 5 minutes late and doesn't come with their starting goalie, we're in.
If I'm poison their pizza, they'll be, I'm just
like, joking. I can't even deal with it. I said, can we just go play the game?
Go play the game.
Guys,
yeah.
Tell me where I'm going.
It'll take care of itself.
But that does make a big difference, right? You just throw it online. Everybody's on their phones.
Boom. Yeah. It's changed everything as far as the acceptance of the results. And we do a system where it's done by game points. You know, you get two if you win, you get one for a tie, zero for a loss. Sure. And then we do head to head. That's our next criteria. And then we do period points, and then we do least goals and most goals. But people are always saying, do you combine the game points and the period points? No, if you know, the rules are very clear that it's step by step by step. But the biggest challenge, I think, is once we place a team, we have quite a few people that want us to continue going down the criteria. We go back to the beginning. So if we have three teams that are tied, we place one, those two teams, we go back to game points. Obviously they're tied, and we go back because it's head to head that usually determines who advances. That's why we go back rather than continue. And that creates a whole lot of controversy for some people, or acceptance of it, and other people. It depends if you got in or not.
Yeah. And I think it's so important that you know the rules prior to playing your first game. It kills me when anybody, coaches, parents, like, well, I don't agree with, that's the way it should be. That's great. That's a comment for 6 months ago or 6 months from now. If it's clearly written that head to head is the tiebreaker, that's the tiebreaker, right? Whether you it or not.
It sounds like to me, and I've never received this from Whitney, but it probably in the guide.
Well, I would hope
so. It is definitely in the guide.
So when I sign up for the tournament, that's very clear. It's not like, well, this doesn't seem fair. Well, no, I know you shouldn't have signed up for the tournament. But I mean, you know, if you want to change the criteria and how that all lays out, then go to the tournament that allows you to never win a game and still get into the finals. That's great. Go to that tournament. But I think when you're going in, it's just like anything else, right? You sign
up. You should
up
make that tournament, Mike. We'll be rich.
Right.
I mean, you lose every game.
As long as you paid, you're in. You're in the finals. And actually, if you pay more money, you get into the finals no matter what. So, but I think the issue is, it's the same thing of everything. Like, you can't go, well, I don't agree with this rule. Well, I know, but you signed up for the tournament. You signed up for even the league.
Great point.
With the rule there. So let's just use that rule. But I think it's so important too. And it sounds like you guys have buttoned this up. Is like your scorekeeper's got to be on task too, right? I mean, how what's the anxiety level between the game clock ending and the score having to be updated?
Yeah.
From the person coming out of the penalty box.
They actually want the score updated before the game ends.
Wow. We'll get a message. We'll get a message or an email that already has, when's the score going to be posted? So
the buzzer just went off. The referees aren't even out of the handshake line yet.
But it is
a thankless. That's the part, right? That's the juggle. That's the like, and again, somebody like me would come in screaming and yelling at you guys. And you're like, okay, I got to act like this is the first time I've heard this complaint. but I've heard it, you know, 7 million times, the same thing. Yeah, but that's the dance of being a tournament director, right? Just saying, we're looking at it. We're going to make the adjust, you know, this is what it is. This is why it's clear. And yes, ma'am or sir, you may not agree with it, but it's been the rule we've had.
That's the rule. No, it's just, that's the rule. That's how we run our tournament.
But people get all heated up and crazy and you know, for whatever, justified or not, they're you know, to Lee's point, you're competitive, and you know, then you start throwing in, you haven't slept in 3 days and you probably have a flight to catch, and
the kids have been awesome. The kids have just been awesome the whole time.
Right. The hotel's never sent a complaint about the ball hockey, nothing. Yeah. So, I mean, everything's going great, I'm sure. But it's like a very stressful, it's funny, every tournament you go to, you're like, why the hell are we doing this? And then you sign up for the next one. But again, if you're having a good experience, that's what I love that in the beginning here, when we talked about that it's not, I don't think you guys, you know, never, you never introduced the tournament as, oh, when you come here, you're going to be shown that you're the top 10 ranked team in the country. And this is going to be, you know, we're going to compete into the death. It's like, we are trying to schedule here for you to have a great experience. And we want you, as a concierge to you, have that experience. And that's, you know, I'll tell you, that's doesn't happen in a lot. And it certainly doesn't happen in a lot of these bigger tournaments where they act like it's a showcase, but all it is you know, somebody scheduling teams to play each other.
And I think when you look back at the history of our tournaments, like I said, early 70s is when we started, probably all the way up to close to 2000, maybe 1995, we were AAA tournaments. We transitioned from a AAA type tournament to more tier two. And that tier two also included all these house select teams that didn't have tournaments to go to. So I think we opened up an area that we felt was, we were comfortable with, you know, providing a tournament for that type of hockey.
I think
a lot of AAA hockey anymore.
I think that
was our basis.
Sometimes the non-AAA kids can enjoy a tournament more than AAA because there's so much pressure at a higher level sometimes to perform, you know, like, you know, man, some of the lower level tournaments are great because it's, you get that competitive atmosphere. And I think even from a development standpoint, you know, kids can discover a lot about themselves from a confidence standpoint, from a team standpoint, when they're introduced to that environment. You know, something you brought up earlier, I wanted to bring up about just tournament guidelines. You talked about period points. And I love hearing you say that. And again, everyone does it a little bit differently, but the idea is that whether you win or lose a period, there's a tally for that of some sort, so that if there is a tiebreaker, you can go back, okay, who won the most periods during the weekend? The reason I love this is because I am very much against goals for and goals against being high up on the list of tiebreakers. I think there is a point that they should come into it. All right. But the problem with goals for and goals against is that you'll get a 20-0 game, a 25-0 game, because that someone says, and here's the thing, it's not really the team's fault at that point. If that's the tiebreaker, it's, well, we got a 20-goal this team or 10-goal this team, so we can get that tiebreaker. And that is not fun for anyone. And I love, as a coach, being in a position to say, hey, let's win the period. All right. Let's win the shift. Let's win the period, because you never know. And I've been in tournaments where we've advanced, or more importantly, didn't advance because we didn't win every period. And it's a great lesson for the kids of this is why playing the whole game is such an important aspect. You can't ever think that you've won. That's a lot better than, hey, listen, we got to get 10 goals this period. If we get 13 goals this game, we advance.
Well, as you're speaking about, like, the type of teams that you're catering to right now, those teams probably aren't going, like, AAA teams are going to 17 tournaments a year. This is probably their tournament. Like, so that experience becomes even really more important for the kids, because it's probably something they normally don't get to do, where these other high level teams every weekend is a showcase in a tournament. Right. So I think that's number one. And I think number two, you know, just the criteria of, you know, when teams play, and I say this all the time, like, you can't in a youth hockey world say, well, this team won this game. I go, yeah, but does your team split goalies? Does your team even have a goalie? Does your team have, you know, so, like, it's just this, you know, did four kids show up for Saturday and miss Friday? Or did five kids leave Saturday because, you know, because they got a lacrosse tournament or they got soccer? Like, there's so many variables in youth hockey. It's not like, you know, that you get the lineup on Monday morning for Monday Night Football. Here's the starting quarterback and here's who's going to play. You have no idea who's coming sometimes, right? So I think having the flexibility as a coach and a parent to know that, you know, all the pressure is not on scoring all these goals or right. not letting up goals. It's just if you're smart and you really know the system and you're really into this kind of thing, I guess, in a tournament, you can start to say, hey, we need to win two of our periods. We could play this goalie. And then if this kid, doesn't matter if he gives up 20 goals, we right. still are ahead. We could win two periods. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of strategy that can go in there if you're really going to get that deep.
It enables coaches to coach better with those rules.
I think so.
Right.
And especially when you get into like the Saturday afternoon game where maybe you're rotating goalies and players and you don't know who should get the start because now everybody's doing the math. And like, I know this kid has played two games in a row, but, you know, he's our starting goalie. He's got to play in order for us to win. Well, I just flew to Nashville and my kid hasn't even seen the ice yet.
Right. You know,
so it's like, it's all kinds of, but it sounds like your tournaments are, because they're geared and I don't mean, and this is not like a reflection of the level, but it's toned down a little bit. Like there's not that piece. Like listen, I've been in tournaments right now where coaches basically won't pull their goalie because if they lose by one more goal and it falls out of the My Hockey ranking, algorithm, that all of a sudden they're going to get knocked out of a 50 point mark and they're going to be a 64 point team, which I'm like, this is how we're coaching. We're insanity. Not coaching to win. We're coaching to manipulate the algorithm, which If I'm a AAA, AA, if I'm in your tournament, I'm just coming to play.
Yeah.
No, but we have some of those ultra competitive coaches.
Oh yeah.
And their teams don't have as much fun. They may or may not win, and they usually don't win. They usually end up losing in a semifinal or, you know what I mean? And then they're just more upset about why the way you wanted it, because if you stack up all of the things you we should win, right? So there's always that element of it that actually we used to run a reform coaches clinic at the tournament. We built a wooden post. It was actually for digital photography, but Brian's dad has, it's this whole, we're all about good sportsmen, how to be good sports, right? A good sport development. They're all kids, whether they're the 8U's to the 18U's, because we go all the way up to 18U. It's about developing these kids because you don't know where they're going to develop, right? So this kid who's playing on the house team at 16 years old could still end up playing in college if they wanted to, and the cards line up and they work really hard for it, those types of things. But these coaches would come to us with tears in their eyes reading his dad's letter saying, I finally got it. And they were one of those uber ultra competitive that read it and went, it's about the kids, it's about fun.
All of it is, right? That's not limited to just tournaments. It's an interesting realization sometimes you see people come to that, you know, from a coaching standpoint, a parent standpoint, a manager standpoint, it's not about us. It's about them, right? And making sure that they have the best experience humanly possible, especially when they're younger. Because here's the deal, man. If I'm 7, 8, 9 years old and I'm just under pressure, I don't want to play hockey anymore after that. Right. But if I go to Nashville, we should talk about that. You know, Nashville is a fantastic destination, right? The DMV is a fantastic destination. You go see the Capitol. You know, if you're in Maryland, you can go see that side of things. If you're in Nashville, it's a great city. Why would you do that and not expose your kid to that wonderful experience, especially if you've never been to those places before? And then, you know, you get these little hole in the wall tournaments. Usually they're local that, you know, they're in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, what is the point of being here? Why did we travel here? So I just think that you're kind of rounding this episode out too. What did we learn today, right? One is that great tournaments have great tournament managers that truly care about the people coming. You know, they're going to have that booth out front. They're going to do less teams over more teams. They're going to find those little ways like crab hats or cowboy hats or straw hats to make you feel welcome, make you feel part of it. They're going to have very clear rules. They're going to have very clear paperwork that shows you this is everything you need to know. That is not a red flag. It's the opposite. That's a green flag. That's a yes. This looks great. The other half, team managers, I'm talking to you. I can tell you guys this right now. The best tournaments I have ever gone to had that first half, but we had an itinerary. Our team manager put together a fantastic itinerary. This is when we're playing. Like you said, this is what we're wearing. We're having a team meal here. You have free time here. Here's the local destinations. I'd like to plan a team trip on this time. This is what we're doing. Parents love that. All right. I love that when I don't have to think. Right. And I can go and, Mike, like you said, not that I would ever get too much, but I can have a drink and be okay, just relaxing a little bit because I know that it's been taken care of. That is the recipe to me for a wonderful tournament experience, that the tournament directors and the team manager are on the same page. And then it makes the coaching easy because you know where you need to be. We're going to have fun. We're going to do what we can. And whether you have three games or five games or anything in between, you have something planned well. And on top of it, especially with Showdown, there's this great Olympic event that we're going to have. And you're all going to get to participate and showcase your skills. You're going to see kids with other skills. I remember doing one of these when I was younger. And I was the fastest skater on my team. And I was not in that Olympic event that we did. And that was a very humbling and awesome experience for me to see, wow, there's kids faster because I can get better and I can move faster. And I got beat today. And it wasn't a negative for me, right? And maybe that's just me. Those are the recipes for a great tournament, right? I think the red flags are, well, we got four teams. This one was just added the last minute. You'll kill them. You'll kill that team because they're just added. They won't be a problem for you. We just had to fill it. And yeah, it's going to be 3 days. And we have t-shirts. We're going to get a t-shirt at the end of the tournament. Thanks for coming. Everybody gets a trophy. Those are the red flag ones for me. I wanted to throw that to you guys too. Is there any other red flags we should look for as parents, coaches, or managers for maybe cash grab tournaments or things you've seen that like you need to run from that tournament immediately?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to communication. If nobody writes you back and you're the contact, that's a red flag, right? Yeah. If you're not getting things by the deadlines of when they say, and there's no information, like no follow-up, those are them. But
that's scary.
The most important thing is the communication. And I say, pack your patience.
Love it.
Remember,
that's great.
Pack your patience.
Yeah, that's something I'm going to steal. Right? That's great.
Remember to be nice. I mean, this whole last week on all of our social media, we thanked everyone involved in hockey. We thanked the rink staff. We thanked the rinks. We thanked the pro shops. We thanked the snack bar. The parents, the team managers.
Everyone.
The coaches, right? It takes
the players
working together.
The refs.
And we don't know who's having a hard time. Like,
right.
Over the years, there's been crazy stories of, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to get up, you know, like teary, but families who had a serious accident. Right. And so, you know what I mean? And they're coming to the tournament. The rest of the team comes and plays in the tournament. That's something like, you know, telling the other team, like, hey, let's remember to be good sports, you know, but also just remember to pack your patience when you're waiting in line, when you're trying to figure something out. Because it makes it easier, as Mike said, the Gap greeter. I used to work at the Gap. I was a Gap manager.
There you go.
So
perfect.
I understand the whole, you know what I mean? Customer service is it for that too, is smile. And as a parent, player, whoever, just smile. Walk in the rink and smile.
Yeah, have a good time.
Say thanks. Say hi. You'd be surprised what's going to come your way.
Right.
How are you not having fun in Nashville anyway? I don't understand how it can even be stressful at all.
Right.
Maybe Washington, D.C., I could see a little stress, but I mean, for
depends
national...
if it's an election year, Mike, to be sure.
Right.
That one goes Friday, everybody's in a good mood. Saturday, it starts to get a little more tense. Yeah. And Sunday, it gets a little, because everything's about the final
championship.
I would add something, just a red flag is if you have access to the results and you look across not just one division, but several divisions, and you start seeing that one team that's blowing everybody out. And it's not just, you know, there is a division here and there that happens. But if you see a lot of high scores and then you see a lot of divisions where there's a team that's dominating, it says that they're not selectively trying to get the teams as tight as possible. And that is hard to do, but I think that's a red flag as well.
That reminds me of one more.
Yeah.
I just forgot what it was. Oh, if there are no local teams in that tournament.
Ooh, that's a good one to think about too.
I mean, unless it's an elite, which we're not, but you know what I mean? If there's no local teams, why are the locals no locals? Yeah,
they know not to show up, right?
Like hey?
No, I think these are great things to look for. And then again, above all, it's about having fun at these things. Even at the AAA level, if you're not having fun, what are you doing? And like, I'll say this, I'll put this out there. Yeah. I cannot think of one game or one tournament ever played where someone's entire career was based on that one thing. Oh. All right. Like if you want to quote unquote make it, it's the culmination of many, many years together in a lot of different things to get to an elite level tournament or a fun tournament, right? I think we got to remember that when we walk in, that even if it's a high level AAA showcase for colleges, you know, I'm a coach. I would never recruit a kid on one game, like alone. I'm saying I would look at the body of work. I'm not saying you can't show up in a game and impress me and then stand out. Of course you can. But I'm looking at everything, the parents. I'm looking at the family. I'm looking at the body of work. Where did they come from, right? Where did you play when you were a kid? And I think that we can forget that too much rides on this, or that the idea that the only way to have fun at a tournament is to win. Winning is very fun. I'll be the first to say that. I love winning, all right? But it's not the whole thing when you go to a tournament at a destination. Now, the way I want to close out this episode, we're talking about the red flags. I'd love to hear from both of you, just your favorite story from a tournament, like the most heartwarming thing you had seen at a tournament that you love, that really made your week, made your month, made your year. Let's end on that, because I think a lot of those moments happen too. You know, when you see things like kids from two different teams shaking hands, or, you know, a team that just lost and a kid consoling them, or just a team that didn't win a game having a great time. You know, what's your favorite stories from the tournaments that you've run?
Want to go first?
Go ahead.
I go first. Well, we're supporters of the underdog always. You got to root for the team that's, you know, having the hard time. And so that Showdown Olympic Skills competition, so many times. So it's not one specific one, but I remember the first time it happened because it's stayed with us. The team, they didn't win, but they won first place in the Olympic Skills competition. Absolutely. And they got a gold medal and they got their crown. Do you know what I mean? But they're like, we didn't win the tournament, but we got this.
Won. Yeah. That's special. Yeah. And again, I love that there's multiple ways to see that, right? Because you know, one of the things going on right now in America, the NBA has that in-season tournament. And I love it. I love it because I think it adds some spice to the league. I think it adds some spice to the, there's another chance to win. This is something that happens regularly in Europe, by the way, that there's multiple chances to win, right? In America, we're all about the one big victory. So I love that a team can come there and say, yeah, but no, we did this. We did this. That's a great story.
How about you?
I think I got a couple real quick ones. One is, you know, during the screen process, finding that team. So if you just look at my hockey rankings, I think you're far from the results that you want. When you dive down into the leagues and understand what league they play in and how those leagues compare across the board, and where those teams fall. So my point is, you find that team that's sitting at the bottom. They've lost every game, but you've got one team that's lost every game by one or two or three goals. They're competitive. The team that's losing by 8, 9, 10 goals, you drop them down a bracket. They come to the tournament. They either win it or they've won three games or two games where they've lost all their games for the season. That is a great experience. And that's what we're trying to, you know, facilitate our tournaments, is to give those teams an opportunity that they don't have in their league play.
Right.
We love, I mean, that, and that's a great, I mean, that just shows what you're doing, right? You know, from your side, not just taking a check and saying, okay, where do you want to play? Oh, we want to play in the highest division or the lowest division. Okay, great. You're in, see you later. You know, okay. You'll get an email from us, you know, in a month. But let me ask you a real quick question, because based off of the good things that the, like, so a red flag to me would be never seeing an organization go back to a tournament that they went to. Like, do you guys have multiple, like, you have organizations that come every single year to your tournaments?
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
To me, that's like, I want to see organization A. It's like a pilgrimage every year that they're going to send their squirt team, or their might team is going to be at your tournament, and you just pencil it in like, oh, yep, they'll be here every year. They're not just shopping around. They're coming. And this is like a place where I think, like, if I'm a family member of a kid that's coming from, like, Learn to Play, I'm like, oh my God, in 2 years, we get to go to Nashville and we get to go to this tournament. And this is the experience. I see all the kids walking around with their crab hats and their, you know, their cowboy hats. Like, to me, that is a piece that I want to see as a hockey organization, that, well, we're sending our kids to the same tournament that's successful every year, whether we win or lose. But we're in there, and obviously these parents are coming back with this great experience.
For Nashville, we're going to give a shout out to St. Peter's Hockey. They send as many kids, as many 8U teams as we can accept. So I think they are up to 7 or 8. We had to stop and they're on the wait list because there's more than St. Yeah. Peter's. There's also Chesterfield, but we'll give a shout out to St. Peter's. The yeah. Queen City Royals always sends a bunch of teams to our Maryland end. The other cool thing is our local teams, Navy, Bowie, Tri-City,
Maryland
Black. Junior Black Bears. They're all coming to the two here, but they're going to Nashville now. And they picked us over. There's a tournament almost every weekend every in Nashville, weekend. But they picked to come to ours because they've had that experience. Yeah. So that's another, you know, claim to the testament of that they like yeah. what we did.
Carolina Junior Hurricanes is another one that consistently comes to our tournaments
in both Nashville and DC.
Yeah. Yeah. See, to me, that to me, like, that's like one, I know, you know, like I know organizations that just go to Can-Am every year and it's one weekend and that's what they do. And I think, you know, there's enough organizations around, but I love the fact that, you know, you guys are seeing those repeat organizations, not just the teams. And then it becomes that destination place for your teams to go into. Awesome.
And a story that I remember, there was a couple things I was going to share with you is my tournament director at 6 a.m. in the morning. He calls me, he says, I think we got a problem. The alarms are going off at the rink. I'm like, what? I said, go in and see what's going on. He goes all the way to the back to find the rink manager. He's up in the rafters pounding with a hammer on some pipes. Don't know what he was doing. He probably knows all the bugs at the rinks. But the one rink, the compressor went down.
Oh, no.
Starting to take water because it was overnight. So now we show up. You've got a whole sheet that you're like, what are we going to do? And Whitney had mentioned the Maryland Junior Black Bears. Nelson Burden happened to be at the rink. And I said, Nelson, we got an issue here. Is there any ice over at Piney? That's where his team plays out of. He made some phone calls, and before you knew it, we were rescheduling the games, and
wow,
all worked out. We didn't even get behind by the end of the day.
That is amazing amount of teamwork and generosity there, because you don't see that too often. It's just, that's your problem kind of.
That's your
exactly. mentality. And I love hearing things like that, because look, at the end of the day, and this is kind of the whole aura of the show, it takes a village for all of this stuff. And, you know, Brian, when you tell a story like that, the thing I always like to echo back to the audience is, like, you know, the kids see that, right? The kids see the adults working together. We're always on the kids for working together. We don't work together so well all the time as adults. So when you see adults working together, you see something organized well, kids pick up on that stuff, right? Oh, I remember I had a good time. And as a parent, it gives you the ability as a coach. Well, yeah, it was a really organized tournament, right? They really did a good job. You see what it's like when you organize and you plan ahead and you do all these things. I mean, there's a lesson in that alone, right? But I gotta tell you both, God bless you, because while there's a lot of positives and I'm sure a lot of negatives, you two have been doing this for a long time successfully. Like what you just said about the teams will travel now to your destinations, I think that tells the audience everything they need to know. So we could keep going on for probably another hour here, but we're out of time. Above all, I want to thank you both for coming on here today, because it's been really insightful. But we got to dive into the kind of like the behind the curtain of how these tournaments run. And I know I'm walking away with, well, I need to look for that more often too. And I need to think about this as well. So again, thank you guys for being here today.
Thanks for having us. And that's one thing we do too. We tell people to contact us and ask questions. Just ask questions. I want to know more, or I've got a question about this. And especially those first year team managers, we say, you are not bothering us. We will answer every question.
That's another rarity. Just to be honest with you, yeah, you are bothering me is usually what people hear back. So I love that you're down for that. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry, but like 100%. And then if I'm not mistaken, it's showdowntournaments.com, correctly, for people. If you want to look this up, you might get an influx now with teams after this episode of like, well, when's the next tournament? Great.
And Whitney had mentioned my father's letter. It's up on the wall behind over Whitney's shoulder.
Yeah, if you're watching, site,
showdowntournaments.com, and click on information.
Well, Gene Harrington,
yes. You'll be able to read that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to say it again, showdowntournaments.com. Obviously, go check that out just to see how they do things, especially if you're a tournament director out there. These two and this family have been doing this right for a very, very long time. And the focus, again, is on the kids and having a wonderful experience. And the hockey kind of comes second to that. And I think that's the right prioritization. Anytime you're looking for a tournament, or as you guys said, I love the tournication. We'll have to do a song for that one. But guys, thanks so much for being here today on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. Remember, all of the episodes are available wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure to check out showdowntournaments.com. Look at that letter. Look at that website. And remember, if you can give us that 5-star review or subscribe wherever you're listening, it helps us out a lot. So for Mike Benelli and our friends from Showdown Hockey, we'll see you next time on Our Kids Play Hockey. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey. Make sure to like and subscribe right now if you found value wherever you're listening, whether it's a podcast network, a social media network, or our website, ourkidsplayhockey.com. Also, make sure to check out our children's book, When Hockey Stops, at whenhockeystops.com. It's a book that helps children deal with adversity in the game and in life. We're very proud of it. But thanks so much for listening to this edition of Our Kids Play Hockey, and we'll see you on the next episode.